G'day countrymen, welcome to Phoenix Rising, the Alec Dumagy Chronicles. I'm Alec Dumagy, enjoy the show.
I'm a rambler, honey, I got traveling in my blood.
G'day all my countrymen, wherever you're listening in, around Australia and around the world via the internet. Big hello to all our countrymen over there in Turtle Island in America. Special mention to my brother Wopila Badhand, our family over there from the Sijunku Rosebud Sioux Tribe, or the Lakota Nation, who just come out of big tribal ceremonies with the Sundance Ceremony. A lot of sweat lodge going on at the moment, of course, for the return of those babies from the Catholic churches as well. So I want to send that love to the Bone Shirt family, to my sister Mona Kills in Water, also the Redbird family and the Walking Eagle family, all my family over there in South Dakota. Very special show today. I've got the, the matriarch of our family here, my mum's big sister. We call her Old Mum. Her name is Estelle George, and she's one of my mothers, and she helped support and raise me as a young child as well. So hello, Old Mum. How are you? You want to say hello in the microphone there?
Hello.
Oh, that's a lovely voice. You need to come a bit closer so we can hear you. Everyone can hear your voice out there around the world. Talk there now, yeah. How are you?
All right, thank you.
Now, I just wanted to say, how old are you? At what age are you at the moment?
71.
You're 71. You don't look a day over 71. I reckon you're a bit older than 71. You might be about 75 or something.
I was born on the 2nd of the 6th, 1950.
That was a different time and age back then. Were you born on the Dumagy Mission?
Yes, on the Dumagy Mission.
And your father is Stanley Dumagy and Nina Dumagy,
yes?
What tribe were they from?
My father from the Garwa tribe,
mm-hmm,
and my mother from the Gungalita tribe.
Did Stanley have Gungalita affiliation as well? Was he?
Yes, with his mother's side.
So that was Rosie Dumagy, yeah?
Yes.
So tell me about his Garawa side. Who was his father on the Garawa side? Was that Flying Fox?
Yes, all Flying Fox. That's Ned Dumagy on the Garawa side.
And where's Ned Dumagy country? Where he originally came from?
Bottom end of Robinson River.
And that's just over the Northern Territory.
Yes, just a mouth. It goes out to the sea, right on the mouth of the river.
Tell me the story behind the Flying Fox. Why is it important with the Flying Fox? Is the Flying Fox associated with the Rainbow Serpent and the Bujimala?
Yes.
Well, how? Like, it's probably named Balaga, isn't it? Balaga the Rainbow?
Yeah.
The Balaga is the
Flying Fox.
Now, Mum, so just so everyone knows, I got my mother sitting in the room as well, just to help her big sister remember things. And she's the Flying Fox Dreaming. She's the Balaga Dreaming.
Yeah.
Tell me the story behind the Balaga Dreaming and why it's important, I guess, having Mum as that totem. She can't
all
eat.
Right.
She can't eat.
Besides, our Ganga side. That's our father's father.
So the Gangu is the father's father. And it's a big story from his side.
Yes.
Is it a big ceremony story?
Yes.
So the rainbow serpent and the Balaga, the Bujimala and the Balaga are like cousins or like sister brother?
Yes.
Like that?
Yeah.
And they're associated with each other, yeah?
Yeah.
So you come from this Garawa, grandfather, Ned Dumagy, and a Gangalita grandmother in Rosie Dumagy.
Yes.
Yeah. And then your mother was a Gungalita woman, Nina, her name was? Yeah?
Yes.
And she was the elder Gungalita woman for the Gunamula mob, the Gunamula?
Yes.
And she's the Barramundi Dreaming.
Yes.
Tell me the story behind the Barramundi. Why is the Barramundi such an important fish amongst Aboriginal people? She's thinking really hard. She's looking at me. Is it because it's such an important dreamtime story amongst the Gungalita?
It is a really important dreamtime story to my grandfather.
Oh, really?
That's my mother's father.
Yep.
From
Gunamo.
Yeah.
This
place up.
You know one thing I want to tell you? I saw a photo of Nana. I saw a photo of Nana that the missionaries took of Nana Naina. And when I was dancing at a festival called the Dreaming Festival in 2009, my old gang, her brother, Aussie Escott, and Gunamulla, her two brothers, they painted me with the Barramundi markings. And it looked really neat from my grandmother's side.
Yeah.
You ever seen that marking when you was younger? You seen them all paint up? Yeah. Tell me about growing up in the 50s. Did you ever see tribal dancing at Dumiji in the old days and stuff like that, ceremonies?
In the 50s.
Yeah, no, when you was younger.
Too young.
So the missionaries, by the time you were born, they were controlling Dumiji, yeah?
Yeah.
Who were the mission managers back then?
Yeah, round about Akehurst and
Reed. Akehurst, Mr. Reed.
Yeah.
When did Alan Hockey come into power?
In the 60s or 70s.
60s. He was the mission manager in the 60s. Yeah. Do you remember what sort of man he was?
No, I know he was a missionary.
Okay. Did you end up in the dormitories with Mum Eunice? Or?
Yes. As soon as I turned six, I went into the dormitory. For missionaries to take care.
To look after you?
Yeah.
Where did your mum and dad go?
They stayed down in the community. They used to call it a little village.
And again, I'll just quickly explain to our listeners out there, the dormitories over here is the Australian name for residential schools where they put Aboriginal kids, took them away from their parents and put them in these residential schools, I guess, to civilize them and teach them how to read and write and be like white people. That's what you...
Yes.
Did you learn to read and write in there?
Yeah.
Did they let you speak your language?
No.
Oh, why not?
Because they were missionaries, I suppose.
So you wasn't allowed to speak your language?
No.
What about put your mark on your markings,
no.
Your paint?
No.
Why not?
Because missionaries.
What
white
about...
people, missionaries.
What about doing your dancing, your tribal dance?
No.
Hey! Why not? What would happen if you ever spoke your language in there? Did you ever get in trouble?
Oh, I suppose we would get into trouble. We'd get into trouble for swearing.
For swearing? Really? Using swear words?
Using swear words.
Oh. And what would happen if you did that?
Yeah, we'd get the cane or get our mouth scrubbed with soap.
So your mouth would be scrubbed with soap or you'd get whipped with a cane?
Yes.
That would have hurt.
I was glad.
I know you laugh about it now and you make joke about it now, but do you remember how painful that time was? How much it hurt you if white people were whipping you?
Yeah. Very painful and wanted to make me to go back to my parents, but I wasn't allowed to go back to them.
Did you ever see your parents while you were in there? From the age of six?
Oh, maybe only on Fridays to come
Saturday.
Up and Saturdays come and visit and go back.
So they let them in on Saturdays?
Yeah, and then go back. They sit outside the fence, we sit in the fence, inside.
What? There was no, so they wouldn't let them in the fence?
No.
So hang on a minute. So every Saturday they'd let parents come and sit outside the fence?
Yes.
And were you allowed to touch them or hold their hands?
I was supposed to frighten to hold their hands.
So you weren't allowed to hold their hands?
Yeah.
What about get a kiss from your mum and dad?
No.
So they wouldn't let them kiss them?
No.
So there was no hugging?
No.
So they wouldn't let you hug your mum and dad?
No.
And you were 6 years old?
Yeah.
Did you cry for them?
Growing up. Yeah.
So you cried for mum and dad?
Yeah.
And the missionaries wouldn't let you through the fence to hug them?
No.
So what did Nan and Pa do? Did they just sit over there?
They'd just sit and have a talk and then walk back down.
And what, to tell you that they loved you?
Yeah.
Did they speak in language to you?
No.
They were told to speak English? Mm. That's pretty horrific. I got to tell you, I'm shocked. First time I've heard this story from you, that you had to sit inside a fence. You know, that's what the Nazis, the German Nazis, did to the Jewish people over in America, in Germany during World War II. They did the same thing. You know that?
No.
They put them in concentration camps, and separated the children from their parents, and they let them talk to each other through the fence. Really sad. But the missionaries, the white missionaries, the Brethren Church, did this to you here in Australia.
Yeah.
Has anyone ever spoken to you about this? Or have you spoken to anyone about what happened to you?
No one spoke to us about this.
How long were you in that dormitory or in that residence?
Until I turned 16, then I...
So that's 10 years. So you went in there at 6 years old. You were 10 years basically in a concentration camp or a prison. It was a prison. Did you have to do labour work in there?
Yeah, like cleaning and washing, cleaning the missionaries' house, like rooms and washing up and that.
So you'd wash their clothes?
And wash their clothes.
And you'd scrub the floors?
Yes, on our hands and knees, on my hands and knees.
What sort of clothes did you get when you were in there?
Just an old green dress.
An old green dress?
No fancy things on it, just straight.
Like a bit like a, like a potato sack.
Just a bit like my mother, like she used to wear in Burketown.
Oh, right, just like a potato sack.
Yeah.
Wow, so what if you didn't do any of these chores, any of this labour work?
We got punished. I got punished maybe if I don't work. But then we had to work, otherwise we'll get punished, we'll get the pain.
What was the main punishment? Flogging, whippings with the cane?
Yes, and not allowed over the boys' side.
So you're not allowed to wave to the boys?
Not allowed to talk to the boys, wave to the boys.
No affection showed to your boys? There's no holding hands?
No.
No kissing?
No. I couldn't even visit my little brother.
So you couldn't even see your little brother?
Yeah, and he turned six then later on.
So your little brother was also in this prison camp?
Yeah. In the boys' dormitory.
So you suffered at the hands of the missionaries.
Yes.
And has anyone ever came and given you trauma counselling or to deal with this transgender, the trauma you were through?
No, nothing. We just...
Has any mental health experts come speak to you about your mental state?
No.
To no one?
No one knows.
How do you feel about that time now when you look back at it? Would you say that you were a slave?
Yes, it's like a slave.
You were a slave.
Yes.
You were a black slave.
Black slave.
In your own land.
Yes.
Prisoner in your own country.
Yes.
You were being whipped.
Yes.
You were being tortured. You were being kept from your parents. You were psychologically being abused. You were mentally being abused. You were physically being abused. And you were spiritually being abused and culturally being abused by the very, very white people that are supposed to help you. Has anyone ever came and apologized to you and gave you a hug and told you that they loved you?
No.
So no one's ever come back and apologized to what they did to you?
I never got thanks from anyone that I worked for. The last place I was working at the hospital, before I went out, when I turned 18, I went away to work outside of Cloncurry.
When you think back to those times, did you ever get paid for that work?
No, not for the work I do at,
so from,
at the hospital.
So from 10 years, from 6 years old, you were six, and you worked for the missionaries in the dormitory, the residential schools, till you were 16.
No, I was 16, then I started working.
Yeah, but what I'm saying is when you were 6 years old, they took you into a dormitory. You used to scrub the floors. You used to wash the clothes.
Yeah.
You used to do all this labour work. Right?
Labor work.
As a child, you were a child slave. That's what they did to you, what I'm saying, Mum.
Yeah.
Understand what I'm saying? So when you turned 16, did they let you out of the dormitory?
No, I was working at the hospital. They just let me go down and come back.
Oh, so they let you out of the dormitory, go to your work at the hospital and back again.
And back.
Did you get to see any of your family, including your parents, Mum and Dad?
No.
No.
I think my dad was working then.
Was Nana still in town?
Yeah. They were at Westmoreland.
Okay. Well, tell me about after you turned 18 and you got sent away to a pasture. You worked on cattle properties, the big ranches.
Yes.
How was that experience?
Well, then I did the same experience like I did at the mission there.
Yeah.
Working for... like housework and that's what I did when I went out.
Okay.
but I don't remember how much wages did I earn.
You didn't earn any money? So you were 18 years old, working away from your country, working away from your family on these properties. What's one of the properties you can remember? Any names?
Granada Station.
Granada Station. Were they kind to you there? Were the white people there treat you nice? Yeah.
They did. They treat me nice. And then I moved on to another station outside of Melbourne. That's Brightland. Brightland.
Brightland. Were there any other Aboriginal people there with you, working?
I had an old friend there, old Barbara Walden.
Oh, she was the only other one that worked. Okay. She passed away now, eh?
Yeah.
She passed away. It was Granny Barbara, I remember her. So you and Barbara, were you stationed at all these places or just you just kind of worked out that one of them, she was there at one of them?
She worked with me at that one station.
Mm-hmm.
And we both left for Christmas and didn't go back.
Hmm. Tell me about, I guess, when you first met your husband, Tommy George. Was that, how old were you then?
Well, how long I was so
what was
I was working at Brightland and come back, that was in the 70s, I come back and work at the hospital again.
So you were what, 20, 21?
That'll be in the 70. Yeah.
And you met Tommy and because he would have been a widower by then because his first wife died, yeah?
Yeah.
And he had his children.
Three.
Was he working in Doomadgee? Yeah. He was headstock.
Yeah.
And how did you meet him? did he see him riding past and?
Yeah, that's when I came back, but I didn't go back into the dormitory. I stayed with
Oh, you stayed out
my
there?
My mum and dad then.
Okay. And
walk up to the hospital.
Oh, so Nana and Pa sort of kept you home and they finally got to keep you. That's good.
In the 70s.
So you met Dad Tommy?
Yeah.
Fell in love?
Yeah, what is in
71, 72.
Was it an arranged marriage through tribal law or was it a marriage arranged through the missionaries? How did that come about?
Yes, through the missionaries.
So the missionaries arranged the marriage?
Yes.
Because Tommy was a widower and he needed a wife. So you were sort of, I guess, set up as his new wife to help with his young children.
Mm-hmm.
And then you and Dad Tommy had your own son.
Yeah.
Thomas, in 1975.
Yeah, we got married in 72.
Yeah.
We had young Tommy,
mm-hmm. 74. Okay. And then you had Terry in 75.
And then 75.
And then I was born in 76.
Yeah.
Yay.
Yeah. And then I got a little stepson, 76, 77.
Imran. Oh, Imran was we were all, I guess, part of your family because you were the oldest in our family and you looked after me as well. What was I like as a child? Was I a good boy? Was I a good baby?
Oh, no, he was very naughty. We went out on a house station and climbing rocks and being so naughty.
I was a naughty boy.
Climbing the biggest hills.
Oh, no. Tell me the funniest story of me as a child. What are something that's funny that I did as a child when I was used to walk away?
Well, you like to play around acting like Rambo and tying little tea trees up and ran his waist, ran his shoulder like a bow and arrow.
Oh, what about cowboys? Was I a cowboy?
Yeah.
I was an Indian.
No, you was an Indian. I don't know where the cowboys were, your brothers.
How did you feel when your husband, Tommy George, became this kind of tribal leader that was taking everybody back off Doomadgee and back onto their tribal lands back in the late 70s, early 80s? You were part of that. Tell me about that.
It was really good. I love to take the kids away out bush, but then no schooling I had out there, but then I went back to the missionaries at Doomadgee and got schoolings and teach Alec, Kingston, Albus, Thomas and Terence in the river, on the Nicholson River.
Well, we're going to come back in the next episode of Old Mum's Old Stories, we're going to call this episode, Old Mum's Old Stories.
Yes.
So we've heard about her early life with the missionaries, and we heard about, I guess, this first when she met her husband. We're going to finish up there because I got to get going all the way back down south now. Is there anything else you want to finish off by saying before I let you go? I don't know. You might want to say something. We're going to have to get going so we don't get out, finish our plane. But I'm going to finish off. Let's play a song. You want to hear a song. How about how about a song from old Uncle Roger Knox, old brother Roger Knox? We can play Stranger in My Land. That'll be a good one, Stranger. Yeah. We'll play Stranger in My Land for you on this little episode. Thank you very much, old mum. Thank you very much to all our listeners out there. We'll finish off here with Roger Knox, Stranger in My Country. I'm a stranger in my homeland. Thank you for listening to the Phoenix Rising Alec Dumbuji Chronicles here on our podcast. We'll see you next time. Have a good day. Take care, countrymen. Maraganyi.
From north to south, from east to the west. A country that was found by a sailor. A country they gave the name Australia. But little do they know of the thirst of Australians who are some land they used to call their home, or some land that they called their own. I remember how they used to walk for miles, to hunt for food in order to survive. They knew when nighttime come, they use it for their bed. A minority group, the smallest in the world, headed on to land they call reserves, crushed by invaders who took away our land. Enough's enough. Now we must make a stand. So give us back some land so we can breathe, where our grandfathers have lived for many years. For many thousands of years, this land here was our home. Now this here land we'd like to call our own. A minority group, the smallest in the world.